into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Oh, well. Busy football show this evening. Dan McDonnell, good evening. It's been too long.
It has been a while, Joe. It's been a while.
No, I said too long.
Oh, well, I mean, it's also been too long, which is an extension of being a while. You know, listen, yeah. I mean, I talked to Will last week. That was actually quite good.
Yeah. Well, why don't you and Will just, you know, go meet up for coffee?
Yeah, well, is that actually COVID compliant, Joe? I don't think you should be encouraging that live on air.
Julian Nagelsmann, he was saying last night, I have a special one for you tomorrow night. He was talking about his outfit, no less, Dan. The trouser will not be that special, he said, but the rest is kind of special. Not as special as the suit against PSG, but kind of special. It's a bit in the British style. So right from the off at Old Trafford this evening, we've been intrigued. He's gone for a tartan grey jacket with a black waistcoat, and then a grey tie, and as he says himself, not special trousers, they're just black. But that's Nagelsmann this evening. They are losing 1-0 at Old Trafford. Greenwood with the goal just, you know, continues through the levels. You know, he hasn't played much Champions League football. I think really his only minutes were that miraculous PSG win the first time around. The first time around when Solskjaer threw him on and we didn't even know who he was. So he hasn't played much in the Champions League, but the way he took his goal, just so calm. I don't know if you saw it. I know you're watching some League of Ireland action as well, so, you know, but he ran across the Leipzig defence and found himself in the left-hand channel. Ball slipped through and just left foot low, bottom far corner, jogs off to celebrate, thinking this is just far too easy for me.
Yeah, I just saw the replay of the goal. It's one of those nights where there's actually too much football going on, so you end up seeing none of it because you're trying to watch too much of it between that and the championship and all sorts of various things going on. But, you know, for Greenwood, definitely, like, I mean, he had that story in Iceland recently and stuff with England and one or two other things. And you always worry, like, the, you know, someone's sort of been thrust into the spotlight very early and then, God, they have one or two stories like that and you think, oh, God, is this going to affect them in any respect? So it's actually just good to see him out there doing something. And, like, he's still sort of breaking records, isn't he? Or he's sort of, in terms of, you know, young players, you know, like, he's ahead of the curve by some distance, really. And yeah, it seems like it's been a pretty lively encounter, but he's I mean, when you consider where he's come from, it's just the thing about Mason Greenwood, like, he actually he hasn't necessarily had like a massive run of like playing, and has he spent as much of his career behind closed doors as he has with like spectators?
Yeah.
Like, I know obviously he'd broken through before the shutdown as such, but he did have that big run, didn't he, after the break with all that run of games and goals where it was behind closed doors and stuff. It's like it's a sort of a weird stage of a career for a young player now. It's pretty getting used to playing in this environment all the time.
Yeah, it's a good point. It might be interesting to get his thoughts on it in years to come if he thinks it helped him.
But it's like academy. Then again, you do wonder sometimes with some of the younger players now that they're so used to playing under 23 football and academy under 18 football in this backdrop. So I wonder, has it taken away like one of the variables from adjustment to senior level? He'd broken through before, but I wonder the guys making their debuts now, like who are really sort of getting a run of games now. Does it make them feel more familiar when they're used to playing in a lot of these stadiums when they're empty and it's the shouts of other people anyway?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Chelsea, by the way, 4-0 winners earlier on this evening, and Barcelona still 1-0 up against Juventus, 49 minutes on the clock. We do have plenty to discuss. Dundalk are in Europa League action. I know you were chatting with your good friend now, Mikel Arteta. We'll get to that in just one moment. Shamrock Rovers league champions, Jack Byrne, is having a tough time as well with COVID. But we'll start with Aidan McGeady. Dan, let me just give you this. You do enjoy a good dressing room fight story, don't you, to kick things off?
And Aidan McGeady, I mean, fiery character. I mean, I'm not casting aspersions on his character. I think that's part of, I think he might admit himself that he has a sparky side, but what have you got for me here?
Well, it's coming your way. I mean, he really is that kind of character. I remember seeing him on the Sunderland Till I Die thing, and he's lobbing snowballs at the academy team, unprompted. And I was like, geez, this lad, I could see, you know, some behind closed doors not taking too kindly to McGeady. So he got into a scrap with Arthur Borrock. He was in the wrong that day, says McGeady. This is on the Open Goal, Keep the Ball on the Ground podcast. There were times when I was in the wrong, admits McGeady. I've been cheeky to people and got a punch, but he was in the wrong that day. So he says, they were arguing about a free kick. Arthur was like, play on, play on. And I said, mate, shut up, it's a free kick. When I said that, he's obviously flipped. I was standing and I've heard people saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. So I turned around and Big Arthur was running at me. He went to throw a punch. I've moved out of the way and he did a forward roll after that, which is always embarrassing if you throw the punch and miss. I asked what he was playing at and he said, I'll get you inside. And to be fair, says Aidan, he did get me inside. So let's progress to inside. I was sitting reading a paper. He says, it was quite...
I like him already.
I listen.
I like him already.
Yeah, the Irish Independent. It was quite sly the way he did it, says Aidan, because he was standing above me. He offered his hand and said he was sorry about earlier on. So I put my hand out and he just went bang and cracked me. Which is, you know, that is not Marcus Queensbury rules.
It's a bit low, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was a good punch because I immediately had a black eye. I tried to get him back. I stood up, obviously raging, says Aidan. I'm not going to batter Arthur Borrock, am I? He's an absolute streetwise 6'4" Polish bear. Do you know what I mean? He says, we do. He can actually handle himself as well. I tried to get back at him. Everyone's in the middle and I'm cutting a bit with this black eye. Arthur's like, I told you. And then he walked into the shower. So with a few of the guys come up to me and start saying, I wouldn't be taking that man. Helpful.
Very helpful. Yeah. As they left. Yeah. Exactly the type of mates you want in that scenario.
Absolutely. So some of the lads came up, I wouldn't be taking that man. So I thought, you're right. I went in the shower after him, but he spotted me coming and got me again. I tried to wrestle him. I had my training kit on. He was naked. I'm trying to get a dig in at him, but he was manhandling me to the ground. He was ready to boot me, but Gaz Caldwell and Glenn Louvins grabbed him and wrestled him away. There you go.
I'm trying to think, he must have been reasonably, just with some of the characters you mentioned there, he must have been reasonably young at that stage. Kip McGeady, I don't know if there's an age put on what he was at the time, but like I remember Martin O'Neill always used the word crabbage, like to describe him, like that he has that sort of cranky streak in him. I've always kind of, I don't know Aidan McGeady at all, but like I've interviewed him a couple of times, maybe once or twice one-on-ones, and he's always had a suspicion, but he sort of has this sort of likable crankiness, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But he's always sort of quite honest, you know, that if he's asked a question, he'll fight back and be sort of spiky in terms of how he responds to it. And I sort of never mind that, to be honest. It's a bit more authentic than sort of the old smiles and sort of almost insincere stuff you sometimes might get from the more polished media performers. He's always been a bit more open, and it doesn't surprise me that he's gotten a couple of scraps over the years, that's for sure.
I agree with everything you said there totally, by the way. He is one of the few players I would always think, oh, I'll listen to his interview, because it's not just going to be vacuous sound bites. You feel like his brain is working when he's answering the questions.
Yeah, no, I think he is. Like, I was trying to think of someone telling me at one stage that like McGeady is sort of, like, I respect the fact he went to Russia. He tried it, you know. I think he tried to learn a bit of language, didn't he? But I think, I'm trying to think who was it said to me before. It must have been an ex-teammate, that he's quite into his football. He sort of is knowledgeable about it. He follows stuff. And he's one of those that, even though, I mean, the last couple of years of his career has been a bit strange. He's probably been on reasonable money at clubs that have been struggling. And that can obviously lead to you being portrayed in a particular way, very negative way. I mean, I was just reading something earlier. It was actually Stephen Elliott put up something on Twitter about maybe whether he should be accepted back into the fold at Sunderland. And he is one of these guys that he's been cast aside by various managers. And when you're paid big money at a struggling club, you know, you get tagged as a mercenary figure when you do that. But I sort of suspect he's someone that once he stops playing, he'll have things to say. You know, I suspect he'll be quite interesting, yeah, you know, to listen to in the future. And sounds like that particular interview is shining a light in it. But, you know, some people don't pay attention to the sport that they're playing, you know, whereas you get the sense that McGeady probably has always been very engaged by it. He would know his stuff.
Yeah. So lots to talk about. Dundalk at the Emirates Thursday night. That's not something we get to say too often. You were hoodwinking with Mikel Arteta. And
he was in my kitchen today, sort of.
Filippo Giovagnoli. Will we start with a clip from Arteta then, just to get the ball rolling? Because obviously we know all about Arsenal. We were curious to see to what extent they were aware of Dundalk. And even here, Filippo Giovagnoli and how he became a Dundalk manager. So that comes up in Arteta's press conference here, Dan.
Yeah, listen, just two quick questions. Firstly, like your impressions of Dundalk from what you've seen and, you know, in your preparations for this game. I suppose on the same team, because you're playing like an Irish side with a lot of players who've been through sort of the English system, are you expecting something that's more typical of a, you know, an English cup tie than maybe an average European game?
Well, we've got some Irish staff here, and I've been told a lot of positive things about them. What I've seen is a really determined coach that has found a really good cohesion around the team. You can see in every reaction while they are playing, how united they are, really well organized. They fight really hard, and they will be coming here with an incredible passion, being the underdogs, and that will give them a lot of energy. And I will expect them tomorrow to be full gas, trying to beat us here.
You mentioned your Irish staff. Is it Barry Solon you've been talking to about this game? Has he given you
a little bit of them? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's a great story, and linking, you know, different backgrounds and different countries into that story. I think it's a good one to hear. I watched a very long interview of his because I wanted to know who it is and what he's trying to do and what he's trying to express to his players. And this is why I found out what it happened. But straight away, he said that he could feel that the players believed in what they were doing, which is everything that coaches want, and I think they have created a really good chemistry. The achievement from last season obviously has given them a big boost, so big merit to them for the work that they are doing.
Got to say, 2020 was strange enough. It's quite surreal to hear Dan McDonald chatting to Mikel Arteta about Dundalk, but there we are.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we lost a couple of seconds from that clip, but obviously the second part of the clip was him just talking about Filippo Giovagnoli. To think, I mean, 2020 is also like the Arsenal manager talking about how he read a big long interview that the Dundalk manager has given. Like, clearly as part of his research, Arteta has sort of, you know, he's ended up just, he's only human, but he's scrolling or whatever, or he's been sent it, and he's reading up about this weird story of this club appointing a guy from the New York youth circuit who'd never managed a senior team before and is now managing in the Europa League. Like, it is an unbelievable story. Like, I would have been in that sort of press conference today. It's a remote press conference with, like, you know, English journalists, BBC, Sky and all of them. And you can see there's a lot of stories about Dundalk either today or tomorrow that it's one of those ones, you know, like if it was any country, you know, if you're playing some team from Bulgaria and they had this weird backstory, they'd be talking about it. It just so happens that it's an Irish one and it's so close to home to us. You know, that you sometimes in the middle of it, you think, oh yeah, this is League of Ireland, it's typical chaos. But people from the outside are just thinking, this is a crazy story. And, you know, I think, you know, there's more pieces to come, I'm told, with Filippo. I think he's done some stuff with English media as well. So it has captured the imagination to some degree. Like, the other side of it, though, is that I still sort of feel a terrible sense of anticlimax about it, too, because this is probably, like, one of the, in the recent era of, like, say, Dundalk's time at the top of the throne. And, I mean, they've been taken over by Shamrock Rovers now, but a game like Arsenal away is almost like a landmark event, you know, to recognise it's a postcard for this time in their lives, for this time in the club's, you know, history. And the fact that no one can go to it, there's no away support going, it's not what it should be. And I don't want to be negative about it, because I know for the players and the people that are there, it's obviously a great thrill. But it's this should be bigger than it is. Or maybe it's I know there's going to be a lot of coverage and discussion around it, but there's the niggling sense of what it could have been as an occasion, as an event. I think I've mentioned before, like when Shamrock Rovers played Spurs in 2011 in London, it was brilliant. It was just brilliant because there was a real Irish community in London vibe about the away support that night. And we're not getting that this time, but it's still, I mean, it is still slightly odd, yes, for sure, to almost, you know, to realise that, yes, you know, they do actually play the same sport. They operate in the same world, you know, and in a way, you listen to Arsenal and Arteta and, you know, speaking with sort of, you know, quite respectful about the opposition and maybe being more respectful in the tone of how they speak about Dundalk than sometimes the language you might hear in your own country here, oddly enough. You know, it's there's almost a, there's a sort of fraternity between like people who work in sort of professional football and they understand each other and the jobs and where you go in the game. And maybe at times we underestimate what some people are trying to do here.
Yes,
working in the industry in this country.
Point. Yeah, no, it's a good point. So we'll hear from Filippo Giovagnoli, though. Now, you might just describe his attire. Julian Nagelsmann is doing his bit for football fashion this evening. Filippo was bringing it today.
Yeah, well, he was, yeah. So basically what they've done is, I think Filippo and his assistant, Giuseppe Rossi, I am completely botching the communication strategy here because I've forgotten the name of the company in Dundalk who have kitted them out. But basically, there's a suit shop in the town. It's Pinstripe something that have, as the name might suggest, have got them in some kind of a smart pinstripe suit number. But part of the style is also a bit of a sort of a cap. I don't know how you would describe it. Like, is it a paddy cap, that they call it now?
It looks to me like an all-black paddy cap, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's sort of what the style of it is. And he basically, it seems like they've done a deal to like dress the Italians for their press conferences in the Europa League. Now, given that I spoke to, I did a piece with Filippo and Giuseppe last week up in Dundalk or 2 weeks ago, and they did point out that like they got the job on a Friday. They came to Dundalk on Monday and they just threw like stuff in the bag. And like it has been pointed out in a sort of in a nice manner that every time someone sees them in the town, they're always wearing their Dundalk tracksuits. So I'm not casting aspersions on their wardrobe, but I'm not sure how many, you know, sets of clothes they actually gear they have with them. So I think they've really welcomed and embraced this new suit they've got.
Pinstripe punk?
There you go.
Give them their plug, at least. Come on.
Well, listen, that I assume that's the whole plan. But, like, I mean, am I here in pinstripe punk? I'm here in a hoodie. Like, if I was obviously in a pinstripe suit during the show here, I would actually remember the name of the company. I do not have that option here right now. But Filippo certainly actually gave them a plug in the press conference today, probably hoping it ends up on Sky or BBC or something. So he's doing his bit.
Well, here he is then. So he was asked what it would mean to him personally if Dundalk managed to pull off a result at the Emirates on Thursday night.
It would be great, not for me, for the club, for the city, for Dundalk, for Ireland, to get some point here, a result. It would be an amazing achievement for not for me, for everyone.
What are you looking for? How will you see then those battles for your players? What will they have to do for you to have fun? What will they have to do to have that challenge?
They will need to face the opponent brave. They will need to try to possess, even here in this stadium, try to have some kind of combination, some kind of build-up that we want to put in our style. And that will be a real proof that we come here to play and not just to defend and stay behind and wait, maybe they score us and just arrive at the end of the game suffering. No, not this. I would love to see them take chance, opportunity, take responsibility in the field. This is what I would like to see.
Mikel Arteta said that he listens to one of your interviews to find out more about you. How do you see his teams playing and what do you know of him? How have you had to do the same to kind of properly understand about Arsenal?
Listen, Mikel Arteta is an inspiration for us. The way that the style that he wants to implement with Arsenal is completely an inspiration for us. Trust me. the way that they want to build up, the way that they did even against Liverpool, that they are one of the team that press better in the world. They didn't care. They keep on going to build up from the goalie. It's an attacking style, but through principle of build up, and that are amazing. Their reaction on the losing ball is amazing. They defend forward. Is that what they try to apply? It's amazing. You can see what he wants to do. And of course, it's going to take time to consolidate the style that he wants to apply. But I think he's in the right way to do it.
Can I ask, have you spoken to Liam Brady this week?
I tried to call him, but no. I will try again tonight, to be honest. Yes, because we have a mutual friend that connect us, and he was really nice with me. He was one of my idols when I was young. He was playing with Juventus. So it was really nice to talk with him a few weeks ago. Really good, really nice person.
There we are, Filippo Giovagnoli speaking in his press conference today. Match is tomorrow. I must say again there, every time you listen to him, he is a charismatic person, Dan, and the suit and all that stuff suggests a certain fun and not taking life too seriously. Nor is he a court jester either. You know, he expresses himself very, very well in English, I think. All of that stuff ultimately is superficial, and we may not know until after he's departed and the players are freer to speak what his coaching credentials were like day to day on the pitch. Have we had any sense of that yet, one way or another?
Oh no, listen, I've heard very positive reports, and not sort of in the this is a press conference, let's say nice things, yeah, you know, context. It's more, you know, sort of speaking to people, and now the players have definitely taken to him. There's no doubt about that. And you know, from the start, I think you mentioned that, like, the people were struck that, like, remember he was mocked quite roundly, you know, when he took the job. And you need a certain degree of strength of character, I think, to go in on that first day and own it. And he has gone in and sort of said, I think they embraced the situation, and they knew people didn't want them there, or certainly not that they didn't want them there, but didn't think they should be there, or didn't know who they were, or who are these people. And they definitely won people over with how they went about their work, not just like by being sound. There was more, no, like they had a bit of a plan. And I mean, for example, last week against Molde, you know, their game plan in the first half was spot on, and you could actually see, yes, this is a team that's, you know, that's playing to a pattern. Now, they lost their way a bit. He was actually sort of quite critical of himself, saying he didn't react to the situation well enough in the second half, that when they started to struggle a bit, he didn't make changes to sort of address it. And But he actually comes out and says that, and it's quite refreshing in some degree. Now, he has cited the fact that fatigue is a bit of a problem as well. Mm. I know some people, Damien Delaney was on at the weekend, says, listen, that's veering into excuse territory. But they do have a pretty hectic schedule at the moment. They still aren't even guaranteed to make Europe next year, although I'm watching St. Patrick's Athletic lose to Finn Harps, or certainly they're losing to Finn Harps 10 minutes to go here, 3-2. That could actually even just give them a little lift in their hotel tonight if they see that result coming through, because it might take some of the domestic pressure off them. But generally, like, he's definitely shown that, like, that the homework that Dundalk did, okay, there was a bit haphazard how they went around it. There was loads of people, like 25, 30 people they were speaking to or looking at, and Mark Kennedy was basically offered the job, and there was other people that they wanted quite seriously. But there was the person who recommended Filippo was this person called Jeffrey Saunders, who is an ex-American professional footballer who actually has business connections with Peak Six, their owners, but also was involved with a club in Portugal, and had actually apparently asked Filippo to manage a men's team in the third tier of, or second or third tier of American football, and thought this guy does have the potential to go far in coaching. And it seems that players are now seeing, yeah, they can see what that's about. Okay. And he's won people over in that way.
Dan, I'm not sure if there's concrete word from Cork City yet. Just to give the context, you can have a quick check there, and the lads outside are having a look as well.
I don't think so, okay. But
I'll give the context and you can have a little quick look. So basically, Cork City, obviously relegated this year, were put into liquidation back in 2010, and then the Friends of the Rebel Army Society, a fans trust, came together, re-established Cork, a supporter-owned entity in the First Division, and then they did very well, obviously, in the Premier Division over the last number of years. Financial difficulty has followed, and so, for instance, this year Trevor Hemmings, who owns the company owned by Preston North End. He had to, he was instrumental in Cork securing a League of Ireland Premier Division licence and ensuring their survival when Preston agreed to pay over $500,000 to cancel the sell-on clauses for Alan Brown and Sean Maguire. Now, the deal included a first refusal option if Foras, the Friends of the Rebel Army Society, decided to hand over control, and that would be for the symbolic price of €1. Basically, over 600 members, Dan, are voting this evening, and a simple majority is required. Postal voting has taken place as well. I know the meeting started at 7 o'clock. So we could, at any time this evening, really get news that Cork City has, changed hands.
Yeah, it's technically giving the Grovemore a right to buy the club, but it seems to be a feeling that they will enact that if that comes to pass. Right. I was told earlier it might be around 10 o'clock where it comes through, but I'm not sure if that's the case. It might just be when we go off air. But it is sort of a sad story in many respects, you know, and that sort of Cork rising from the ashes was an amazing tale. The fans did save the club, as you mentioned, and they've had sort of amazing highs in the last decade. You know, they won a double. They won a couple of FAI Cups as well. And, you know, they were in many respects like looked like a model that you wanted to emulate. But they made some very bad mistakes during the good times. They didn't spend really, didn't put money away for a rainy day, as the phrase has been used. And I was listening to John O'Sullivan, who's one of the people involved with setting up Forest. He speaks very well in the league generally. He was on Alan Cawley's podcast, and he sort of laid it out quite well. He basically, he's reluctantly, even though he was one of the defenders and main drivers of Forest, has basically said he's come round to voting yes, because they've ballsed it up really, and the model that they have there with, you know, a democratically run club with the, you know, the fans running the show, it hasn't worked there, because they've ended up with sort of basically, they haven't necessarily had the right quality of board or the right sort of profile of board to make good decisions throughout their existence. And it's left them in a situation now where they're in trouble, and they basically need help to get them out of the plight that they're in. They don't have a really viable plan B other than let's hope this turns. I know there's still opposition to handing over control. In an ideal world for me, you'd like a situation where, for example, Shamrock Rovers at the moment have 50% fan owned, and then they have Dermot Desmond and Ray Wilson, you know, private investors. And there's a sort of a hybrid model. But it seems like this is 100% or 0% with this one. It's just a shame that it's come to this, but the current board are advocating that you vote, that the members vote yes. The staff of the club are basically advocating a yes vote, because they're pretty worried about the viability of their jobs. And it appears that the percentage call from everyone reluctantly with a heavy heart is to go with this, because they don't have a better option. But it's really unfortunate. Like, you know, Cork is a great club. It's a great place to go and watch football when things are going well. And it's not like this is after, you know, years of disaster and fans stopping going. It's like in very recent memory, the people who tune in and out of the League of Ireland, you know, very casually, will be a bit mystified by this, I think, because it's really in very recent memory. You're watching them in the Aviva in a cup final and Shawnee Maguire and all of that. 7,000 people at league games and stuff. And how have they ended up now? They've been relegated, and they're being basically sold for €1. It's sometimes the League of Ireland, the Irish football beat, it can get you down, you know, in the sense that it feels like it's a recurring boom and bust cycle, and you want to escape from it, but it always feels like we're trapped in versions of the same story being told again and again. And Cork was meant to be something different, and it was something different actually. It was a great thing for a while, but they got to a stage maybe where their rotating of the board ended up with a board that made decisions that came back to hurt them.
Right, that's a great pity. Before I let you go, Rovers, obviously, since we last spoke, won their 18th League of Ireland title. Jack Byrne, two points I just want to get your thoughts on Byrne. The first one, there's probably not too much you can say about it, but suffice to say, it turns out that, you know, we can all forget this, his dose of COVID has been a difficult one for him, and it hasn't been plain sailing. It most certainly has not been asymptomatic sailing. And then secondly, you know, there is interest from Cross Channel, and Rovers have made what they're calling a fantastic offer to try and keep him at home.
Yeah, I mean, no, it is true about the he did get a bad dose of COVID, and I sort of I'm sort of aware that he has sort of been hit badly by it, and I think wouldn't be surprised if at some stage you'll hear him speak about to take the virus seriously. Basically, I think he's one of those people that's had a sobering experience, I suppose, and knows that it's very real in terms of the impact it can even have on a very fit young athlete, and that is most certainly the case. In terms of the broader picture, I just watched Manchester United have scored here, by the way, a second goal.
But, yeah, Rashford.
But the broader picture with Jack, of course, is there's a big debate over what happens. Naturally, Rovers want to keep him. Of course, they're going to make him a big offer. He's the best player in the league. He's a star player. It's just a question of where his career goes from here. People will naturally say he has to leave, you know, for the sake of his career and for the sake of his Irish career. I don't disagree with the view. The only thing I would say is that the next move he makes is a really, really important one for him. So he shouldn't just take the first offer that comes, even if it's an attractive offer in many respects. It sort of needs to be the right one. He needs to plot this move carefully, because he has a couple of blots on his copybook, maybe in terms of overseas or, you know, England, I mean, even further afield. And I'd love to see him try somewhere else. But I mean, it seems that, you know, England is obviously where the better financial offers will likely come from, and it's his natural appeal to him. But I think, you know, he needs to be sure that the club he's going to know what he is and who he is and what type of player he is, rather than just going to a club for the sake of going to a club. I think he is a player who needs, needs an understanding manager in terms of accommodating his talents. And as a consequence of that, I sort of feel that, you know, he needs to be careful about the option he takes and not just leap for the door for the sake of it.
Yeah, totally agree. And hopefully he's back feeling 100% very soon. Marcus Rashford has just scored his second and United's third, by the way. In fairness to Solskjaer, he can pick some interesting formations and different formations, and he's going up against the wonder kid that is Julian Nagelsmann this evening. And Manchester United have done really well. Brilliant goal
they're
by Rashford.
They're so explosive
again.
They're so explosive. Like, they can be so explosive, can't they? You know, they look, that's a fantastic goal of, like, again, counter, like, winning possession high up and just having the ability to punish it in 5 seconds. Like, it's sort of impressive that they can do that.
Well, in some ways, you know, the worst thing you can do against them is to sit deep and bring them onto you, and then they run out of ideas. But in this environment where a good team come onto them, even at Old Trafford, they can cut you to shreds. And like, Rashford's first goal was kind of, you know, ball over the top effectively. He's on the halfway line and he just finishes. And then, you know, as you said, his second goal tonight was winning the ball high up. But they played a dime in the midfield, split strikers, and I mean, Leipzig are a really good team, you know. You're Champions League semi-finalist. That 3-0 at home is a real fillip for Solskjaer. Even Patrice Evra will take that one, Dan.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
We've got to wrap things up. So listen, enjoy the game tomorrow, Dundalk at the Emirates, amongst other things. We'll say goodbye to you, Daniel McDonald of the Irish Independent. Cheers, Dan.
Cheers. I'll enjoy it from the couch, show.
Yeah, exactly. Short ad break, and we're going to hear about tough times for Neil Lennon at the moment as well.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, 3-0 Manchester United against Leipzig. Marcus Rashford has come off the bench to score two. Man alive. He is an impressive human being on and off the pitch. Ridiculous stuff. Two brilliant goals as well. Marcus Rashford in the midst of single-handedly taking the fight to the Tory government over the past couple of weeks. So that is the story at Old Trafford. Moussa Dembele has Barcelona 1-0 up away to Juventus. And we were chatting with Dan before the ad break there about Dundalk at the Emirates tomorrow. As Rashford cuts through about four players in the box. Ooh, he's blocked down. He's playing very well. He's enjoying himself this evening, Rashford. 3-0 United still. So Michael Duffy is playing for Dundalk tomorrow at the Emirates, and he's doing a pitch-side interview here on Twitter in front of me during the ad break with the Dundalk FC social media man. And Thierry Henry was my idol when I was growing up. I asked for Thierry as my confirmation name. They said no at the start, but the teacher came back to me 2 weeks later and said he was a saint and therefore I could have it. So Michael Thierry Duffy will be playing for Dundalk, amongst other things, at Arsenal tomorrow. We're turning to matters far more serious. Neil Lennon. Not happy with lots of people, very much including the media. So Celtic run a not great run, 3-3 draw with Aberdeen at the weekend, lost 3-1 to AC Milan, and then 2-0 in the Old Firm as well. So that's the second time they've lost to Stephen Gerrard of late. Here is Neil Lennon, not happy.
You said that conspiracy theories revolving your role at the club. Can you expand on that, please?
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, people, you know, are saying that I don't do this on the training ground. I don't do it. Nobody knows what I do on the training ground. You know, nobody sees what I do on the training ground. I'm here 8:30 in the morning, maybe 6 o'clock at night. I work with my coaches day to day with the players day in, day out. So, you know, you hear all these rumours, and that's what happens when you through a little spell, all the conspiracy theory comes out about fallouts, dressing room breakups, all that nonsense. And that's what it is, it's just fake news. I sound like Donald Trump now, but it's just all fake news.
Oh dear. Don't use the fake news line. Like when you're, of all the phrases not to use, that has to be number one. Robert Grieve of the Scottish Sun is with us. Evening, Robert.
Good evening, how are you?
Don't say fake news. Whatever you do, don't find yourself saying fake news in a press conference.
No, I don't know where he got that one from, but I don't know if that was the best expression to use from Neil. But listen, he's in a situation just now where he's under pressure. I think he may not want to admit that, but with results at Celtic, it just goes with the territory. You don't win in three games and people are going to start asking questions.
Now, to be fair, one of those games is against AC Milan and they did draw with Aberdeen. So I appreciate losing in the Old Firm is not good. Are things really that bad?
Well, I wouldn't say they're that bad. I mean, Celtic are still very much in the title race, which I think is a be-all and end-all for Celtic this season and their fans. But it's not just the three results. In the back of the, when you think of Celtic getting out of the Champions League to Ferencvaros, a very ordinary Ferencvaros side. And then, as you say, one of the games in the last three has been against Rangers. And that's, you know, what comes after a defeat to Rangers, certainly at Celtic Park. So, as I say, it goes with the territory. Mm. Celtic, if they don't win three games, Neil Lennon knows as well as anyone that the manager, whoever the manager is at that point, is going to be under pressure. Listen, whether that pressure leads to him getting sacked, I would doubt it at this particular moment in time. But he's still under pressure. There's fans who aren't happy. There's fans asking questions of the team. And if you look at the performances, probably rightly so.
And what's going wrong with the performances?
Defensively, they've not been good enough. The goals that have been conceded haven't been good enough. If you look at the Rangers game, the overall performance was so lacklustre from a Celtic side in an Old Firm game, which was always going to mean a lot to both teams. Wasn't any fans inside the stadium that day, obviously, and I think that seemed to kind of seep into the players' performance. It was, as I say, very lacklustre. But defensively, you look at three goals against Aberdeen on Sunday. That was at Pittodrie. And they were, once again, very poor goals to give away. The AC Milan game, albeit we think of AC Milan as a top team, they had Zlatan Ibrahimovic playing, obviously, that night as well. But the goals that Celtic conceded were very, very poor. And that, if you ask Neil Lennon privately or even publicly in the press conferences, if you listen to him, he's not happy about the defensive performances and the way his teams are shipping goals.
Give us your sense of Shane Duffy's role in that. So, for example, Chris Commons, working now as a pundit, said Duffy just looks like an accident waiting to happen. He needs to get himself up to speed and sharpish, described him as rank rotten of late. So what are we seeing from Shane Duffy?
Yeah, when Shane Duffy first came to Celtic, it was exceptional in his first couple of games. I think he scored in both his first two games up at Ross County and then against St Mirren and Paisley. And at that point, you're thinking it was a great signing. The threat that he carries in the opposition box as much as anything. But defensively, the goals that Celtic have conceded, he hasn't looked very clever. I think when Celtic signed him, he said himself, I was there the day that Shane Duffy was paraded to the press at Celtic Park, and he described himself as a no-nonsense centre-back, head it, kick it, get the ball away. Mm. And he's not done that. You probably know, you all know Shane Duffy better than I, in the performances for Republic of Ireland in recent years, but he's not done what it says in the tin. He has been a disappointment, although in saying that, Neil Lennon spoke about him last week prior to the Aberdeen game, and he referenced a dental issue he's got. I think he may have an abscess, which has given him considerable problems.
Nice.
I don't think great shape that way, but I think if you ask Shane Duffy himself, I think he would admit that his performances have been have been pretty poor since coming to Celtic from a defensive point of view.
Okay, and what kind of mistakes was he making, Robert?
Well, against Aberdeen, a basic mistake. I mean, getting chased into the corner, an opportunity to put the ball back to the goalkeeper or put out a play. And he tried to be too clever, and Scott Wright took the ball off him, knocked the ball inside, and Celtic suddenly lost another goal. Against Milan, a simple ball into the box over his head. He misjudged it. He misjudged the flight of the ball. And the young lad Welsh behind him didn't kind of tuck in the cover. Those are goals you wouldn't expect Shane Duffy to be culpable for. If you look back at his performances down the years, both internationally and at club level at Brighton, he doesn't tend to concede those goals. That's why he's been brought into the team, to stop those goals getting in for Celtic, and it hasn't happened. So I think he's got a bit to do to convince the Celtic fans that he is going to be capable of dealing with this Scottish football. We all know he's clearly a good player. He's played in Premiership football, Premier League football in England. Mm. He's played at an international level. So he's clearly a good player. Mm. But I don't know if maybe the Celtic fan in him, it's maybe been a little bit too much for him initially. Maybe he's trying too hard because of the fact that he says himself he's a lifelong Celtic fan. So maybe that's impacting on him. But listen, it's early days, but he definitely has to improve his performances. There's no doubt about that.
It's a very interesting time now for managers under pressure, because we don't have fans in a stadium to either boo or support. Neil Lennon was talking about the fact that this is all media driven. There's no question. I've seen two newspapers run polls on whether or not I should get sacked. And I've never seen that before in the 20 years I've been here. That's interesting. So the poll is a new thing, certainly in his eye. We have Rangers 6 points clear of Celtic in the league. Celtic do have a game in hand. Are we close to people saying this is Rangers' year?
Well, certainly you can't fault Rangers for the start they've had to the season. They've been exceptional. If you look at the European results, especially, and they've carried that into their domestic form and performances, I thought they were excellent against Celtic at Celtic Park. Albeit, I think that result was probably more down to how poor Celtic were on the day. But you can't fault Rangers. They're under as much pressure. Stephen Gerrard hasn't won anything as a manager at Ibrox or anywhere else. Mm. And this is obviously a big season for him. And he's, so far, you can't fault him. Rangers are playing well. They're getting results. They don't look like losing. And complete opposite from Celtic, they're not conceding goals. They're defensively solid, and teams, they just aren't conceding goals. If you've got that base to build on, then that's a great starting point. Celtic don't have that just now. Mm. Look, as Neil Lennon mentioned after the game at Pittodrie, they look fragile. That was the word they used. There was a fragility there. Rangers are the complete opposite. They look stronger. But as I say, we're early in the season. We're not even out of October. And there's a long way to go. But at the minute, Rangers are looking good. I think everyone at Celtic would probably reluctantly have to accept that.
Right. And how trigger happy are the Celtic board? I mean, how long will this go on for before they might look at Lennon and think this ain't working?
Well, I don't know whether they look at it. I mean, I don't think they'll make a knee-jerk reaction. I don't think, if you're asking me right now, I don't think they're on the verge of sacking Neil Lennon, far from it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, results tell. As you say, Rangers are 6 points clear, albeit Celtic have a game in hand just now. They can go 9 points clear on Sunday. Rangers are playing in the league while Celtic are playing Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup semi-final, actually from last season. Mm. So there's a chance for Rangers to get a bit of daylight between the teams. And again, that adds to the pressure. But if you're asking me right now, I think Neil Lennon's still the man for the job at Celtic. I think they will keep faith in him. But that doesn't mean to say he's not under pressure. He knows that. He's been at Celtic long enough, both as a player and his first spell as manager, to know that the job comes with pressure. And the pressure is they have to win. If you don't win, as I said right at the start, if you go 3 games without a win for Celtic, or Rangers for that matter, the pressure's on. It doesn't matter whether it's AC Milan or whoever. Throw in an Old Firm defeat in that as well, only intensifies. You're right as well. There's no fans inside the stadium, which is probably helping you, Lennon and the players, because I think the reaction, obviously there's been a reaction in social media, various amongst the Celtic support, but if there had been 60,000 fans in Celtic Park on Old Firm Day, I think it would have been a reaction that maybe I would have said a lot more about how the Celtic fans are feeling.
Yes, and that can catch the attention of the board for sure. Robert Grieve of the Scottish Sun, thanks so much, Robert. Much appreciated.
Pleasure.
Marcus Rashford scored a hat-trick. It's just a remarkable performance from him. So first goal on 74 minutes to make it 2-0 to Manchester United. Then 4 minutes later made it 3-0. Martial then had a penalty in the 87th minute, and just in added time, Marcus Rashford has scored his third and Manchester United's fifth. That is, without question, the result of the night. Manchester United 5, Leipzig 0.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network.